Bubble!
Hello and welcome to Burst the Bubble. You're listening to CamFM, and I'm here with my co-host Michael Quinterio.
Hello.
And our guest this week, Sarah Franklin.
Hello.
This is a program all about the silly news stories that have occurred in the last week. Michael, would you care to kick us off with our first story of the day?
Well, we're going to be talking about alcohol in our first section. There have been a couple of stories, some related and some tenuously related to alcohol. And firstly is in Chesterfield, where criminals have all been invited to have some free beer.
Some free beer? Well, it sounds like a mighty generous offer. Surely there couldn't be a catch.
Yeah. But actually, this offer of free beer was provided by the Derbyshire Constabulary. And when the criminals turned up expecting booze, they instead got busted.
What was the address? The Derbyshire Police Station. And lots of criminals going, well, it's unconventional, but I like to see dual purposing of public buildings. No!
They did get a phone number to ring at first, which was actually Chesterfield Police Station. Mm. I'm assuming it was the local number rather than something like 999, because that would have been quite funny if someone actually accidentally going. Free beer, just ring 999.
Well, hopefully it was a dedicated line, because otherwise, surely everyone ringing the police station with some sort of problem would have instantly been offered free beer in a giveaway competition before it became obvious they were not a criminal.
Mm. It might be a good way to filter the more trivial police calls. So free beer? Well, yeah, okay, no, forget it. Yeah, free beer. sign me up. No. If you did it with the 999 operator, it would be quite difficult, because they'd have to be like, you know, emergency which service or beer. And I suppose that had a similar effect. This series of people sort of going, well, my house is on fire, but given an adequate amount of beer, that could work.
Oh, you see, this reminds me of some of the things that they do actually get 999 calls, and you're just like, who are these complete idiots who are phoning 999 because their phone is not, their mobile, like, smartphone is not working in the way they so desire?
As it, what, they phoned 999 because they couldn't figure out how to phone any other number?
Oh, possibly. I assume it was the apps or something that were going wrong with it, rather than the actual ringing facility, but... what's brilliant, though, is that the Chief Inspector, Graham McLaughlin, who's leading the operation, said, "These suspects are people who have managed to evade arrest for some time."
But one letter to their house, and it was all sorted.
So perhaps the police's strategy so far has been so complicated that they haven't been able to understand it. You know, they've been, like, sneaking them coded messages that, had they correctly decoded them, would have been, like, a spoof from their accomplice, encouraging them to, you know, meet on a certain Caribbean island at a certain time and date, and they just couldn't fathom, you know, the complexity of the plan. So now the police have finally got them with the simplest plan.
So they will continue to use new tactics when necessary. And I think they've got a good idea when new tactics are necessary. When you're not catching criminals, that is a good one. That's a good sign that new tactics, props involving beer, are necessary.
Given that this one has worked, then perhaps they should consider, like, putting some candy canes in the park and then hanging an anvil above it. You know, like putting a banana skin on a staircase they think these criminals might utilise. That kind of thing.
I wonder if they target the products for the individual groups of criminals. So maybe these criminals were all, you know, drunken, violence-related criminals. They'll go for the gangsters next with offers of, you know, free bullets, if you call this number. A whole range for the different types of criminals you could have.
Free shops for those who go shoplifting?
Yep.
Free shops? Like, you don't have to shoplift. We'll make you manager of PHS. One solution.
It would confuse the heck out of them, so...
It would.
So, I think confusing the criminals is a good first step. Perhaps you could send them presents. Perhaps a Christmas card. I'm sure I've read somewhere some police somewhere got in trouble once because it was found out that they sent, like, Christmas cards to all the people kind of like on their contacts list, but somehow all the details of the criminals that they'd arrested had ended up on this contact list as well.
Be a bit dangerous if you were grass as well. What's this you've got here, darling? Oh.
It's a great reply all mistake, isn't it? I've accidentally emailed the mafia. Pretty much everything we're doing for the next year.
Yeah, it's not very complicated. It says one, fight crime, two, try and prevent people from doing more crime.
In fairness, that's pretty much fighting crime.
Yes.
I could abbreviate this business plan. One, fight crime. Two, lunch. Three, continued fight crime.
I do wonder what beer it was. Was it just like generic, we will give you some beer? Or was it specific brands?
Maybe it's targeted for each individual criminal based on their drink preferences in the past. I'd like to think they put a lot of work in. This is like the culmination of 2 years worth of hard thinking.
And also like investigations into which beer would be the most likely. Perhaps they actually held a survey beforehand with people who they had actually caught, saying what type of beer would attract you. Of course they had to do an entire lifestyle survey, not just this, so they wouldn't like tip it off. So all these criminals were getting random things like, how many hours of TV do you watch a week? And all they actually cared about was the beer question.
I guess you could experiment in prisons. Like, they'd be on their way to the lunch hall and there'd be two doors, one of which says prison and the other which says Coors Light, and they'd be like, oh, it's just more prison. But you see what proportion of them choose the Coors Light door and what proportion sort of go, oh, I'll actually opt for prison, given the choice.
And there are two guards in front of these doors, one who always tells the truth
and one who serves beer.
Perhaps it's just like a good cop and a bad cop in front of the doors instead. So if you've got any suggestions for other traps for criminals that you would like to suggest to any police across the country,
or perhaps if you can think of the favourite beer of the criminal underclass,
then you can email us studio@camfm.co.uk.
Or there's a web form type thing in the thing that you use to listen online. I'll think of a better way to phrase that by next section.
Or you can text us. Text costs 10p plus your standard message rate, and you have to text CAM plus your message to 80809.
That's right. So, what's up next? What's our next story?
Now we're going to from beer to wine, so depending on the way you see alcohol, possibly moving up in the world?
I suppose so, yes. I think we've moved at least one class upwards.
Yeah,
we're now decidedly middle class. But what's special about this wine?
Well, it's possibly even more middle class than that, because there are special eco bottles made out of paper rather than glass.
Hmm. So superficially, it sounds leaky.
One would assume that you managed to do that. Did you never make those, like, paper water bombs? You can make water bombs out of paper.
I agree, but I didn't tend to keep them, transport them around the country and carry them home in the back of my car over the course of about a week.
But perhaps you could, given this story. Perhaps you actually could. Perhaps they are more robust than even you could have thought of. The UK is poised to run out of space for landfill within 7 years, which is just hidden away inside the story with no other reference to it whatsoever, so we'll ignore that. And just focus on the fact that we've got paper wine bottles.
Yes, okay.
And the paper wine bottle weighs only 55 grams, whereas a standard glass bottle weighs half a kilogram. So it's a lot cheaper to transport.
So these paper bottles give me a certain, I suppose, an opportunity and also a concern for a certain brand of drama. You know that scene that you see occasionally in films where there's like maybe a politician or something will be watching the news with a glass of wine in hand, and then he'll become so silently furious at what he's seeing that the glass goes. And it's like, oh, you know, and the symbolism and stuff.
They should hire you to do sound effects.
And also the grievous wounds to the poor guy's hand. So this is both safer, but it's also really underwhelming when, like, only when he's mildly peeved, the bottle of wine sort of goes, and he's like, oh, I quite like that wine. I was only slightly irritated.
I assume it was designed by people who make wine cellars, because, of course, the old wine cellars with the leaky roofs and the rising damp are not going to be ideal for these wine bottles. So everyone get their massive collection home and think, oh, better get that damp rot sorted.
It'll have to be vintage last Tuesday before it's worth anything, yeah.
Actually, going back to the film thing, I thought you were going to talk about the sort of scenes where someone in a bar fight smashes a wine bottle and starts trying to attack people with it. But basically, trying to stab someone ineffectually with a bit of damp cardboard papery substance is notably less aggressive.
This could be the undoing of Glasgow. What will they do?
Also, it says here, the paper bottle is compostable and decomposes in weeks. So.
Woohoo! It is full of plastic on the inside, though. So I don't know which whether you'd recycle it, put it in your normal bin. I think you'd have to put it in the normal
bin. It sounds like it would be the same stuff as Tetra Paks. You know, the orange juice cartons, yeah, and things like that. Which you can recycle in some places. Not funny, but informative.
Yeah. There's a quote here which consumers don't care so much about whether wine is green or not. I would be quite off put by green wine. I mean, there's red, white, and rosé, which is sort of in the middle. Not so much green.
Quite.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Have you any idea why wine is sold in a green glass to begin with? There must be some reason, you know, some precedent was set there that people want to drink their red wine looking pitch black when it's in the bottle, but not quite pitch black when it's out. I don't know. What went on there? Is it supposed to look classier? I just can't fathom. I thought
maybe it's a Christmas theme. It was introduced once, a Christmas gimmick, and then it stayed around.
Yeah. Or maybe like St. Patrick's wine or something. They unleashed an unusually good wine for St. Patrick's Day, and now that's dominated the wine market.
I was guessing it was just a thing to do with like the light that goes through it. Perhaps it likes green light better.
That's definitely why it looks green. But yeah, no, actually, you might have a point that those pesky photons might have been smashing up the wine molecules into other wine molecules, and that might actually have been a problem. Although in that case, you might want to store your wine in a sort of a pitch black obsidian container in order to keep it as good as it can be. And also, you're probably keeping it in one of those aforementioned musty, dusty wine cellars as well.
Mm.
So that should be, you know. This seems like an invention for people who are keeping their wine on their patio in Greece, but are sufficient connoisseurs that they can tell when it's been photoned. You know when you've been photoned.
What? Has the wine been corked? No, worse. Photon.
This wine has been muoned.
It's a lot rarer than being photoned.
It is. It really only afflicts people drinking wine in the upper reaches of the Himalayas.
Oh, dear. But moving on to a very brief coverage of a story that before, this one doesn't involve alcohol in the here and now, but is related to a story in the past that involved alcohol. Because this is a story that police have searched a prison in Mexico and found birds, marijuana, knives, and prostitutes. And in a previous first of all, we talked about people looking in jails in Mexico and finding bars in there that where all
they
the alcohol
occasionally look in bars and find jails.
Well, I think the takeaway message is if you're going to get arrested for some sort of terrible drug crime, try and do it in Mexico. The facilities there are impressive.
Oh, really? Excellent.
If eclectic.
Also, if you want to appear in the Generation Game, you should probably do it in Mexico so that, you know, Brucio Forsythio will be like, and we've got peacocks, a bar, a year's worth of marijuana, some prostitutes. Let's not go on the Mexican Generation Game.
I'd love the thought that they weren't actually prostitutes at all. They were very inspired prisoners who decided to get dressed up at the last minute in a Toad of Toad Hall style thing. Say, oh yes, I'm a prostitute who was just brought in. Please take me out of this prison and release me back to where I belong. Thanks.
And the same happened with the birds. They've been arrested and they were like,
oh no, yeah, no, they snuck us in here. It's peacock fighting or something. I don't understand. Take me back to Baja California where I belong. I think that's a thing.
Yeah, that would be actually quite nice, just like managing to get a fake passport for one country that you would actually like to live in.
Especially if you're a peacock.
But
that's really difficult.
I think it makes it a bit hot for peacocks, personally. I mean, they're quite fluffy.
Yeah. Although their fluff is quite distributed. Maybe that's the deal with the peacock. They were too hot, so all the fluff has been kind of kicked out. So it's really just it's fluff wrapping up other fluff, whilst the peacock itself is relatively cool.
Evolution in action.
Yeah. It's like if Americans migrated to equatorial regions, then we'd eventually find that those stereotypically fat Americans would have a completely separate sort of part of them that contains all of the fat, and then an ordinary looking person.
Like a camel.
Yeah, you would sort of, or you might like pull it around like a ball and chain. So, at the very least, there's some symbolism to be had.
But we're going to take a short break now, but if you've got any comments on any of the news stories that we've covered so far, you can email us, studio@camfm.co.uk, or you can text us by sending CAM plus your message to 80809, text cost 10p plus your standard message rate, or you can use the web form to get in touch with us there.
We have also received at least one email during the past section, which reads, "Yay, Chris is back. He's the best one, certainly the sexiest at least." So we can tell that at least one of our listeners, in common with the theme of the show so far, has been drinking. Now then, we'll take a musical break. We'll be back shortly.
On air,
97.2,
online,
camfm.co.uk,
and across Cambridge,
your station,
your Cam FM.
Hello and welcome back to Burst the Bubble. It's a show about silly news stories, and in this particular section we're going to be talking about conspiracy and the arts.
That's kind of like two separate sections, not like one whole thing.
Although if we can marry them together, if we can try and get art elements into our conspiracy stories and vice versa, I think it would do it good. You know, I think it would... The main priority here is consistency over coherency. So then, Michael, what is our first story about conspiracy and or the arts?
Giza's Great Pyramid had to close down. I'm not sure how you close down a pyramid, but it was closed down anyway, on the 11th of November this year, because there were lots of reports that there were going to be strange Masonic rituals.
Ooh. Were there?
No, it was closed down. Oh. Oh, unless they were really, really secret Masonic rituals, which meant that they actually could get in and do these rituals without actually being spotted. But yes, apparently lots of people were lots of people were getting really worked up about this, including the what were they called, the organization,
the Universal Kabbalah Network. Apparently, were involved with this. Also, the Gathering of Souls. The Kabbalah, I thought, was actually that was water, wasn't it? It was plain old water, which was being sold as some religious connection. But I won't get into that with any great detail because clearly I don't know any great detail. I quite like one of the movements involved was called Hug the Pyramid.
Aww.
Which strikes me as A, difficult, because it's not, you know, it's very unhuggable, being, you know, almost perfectly flat by and large, you know. And secondly, it sounds to me kind of like it sounds like a euphemism for a punishment. You know, like criminals might tell you you're going to sleep with the fishes. Like they might tell you you're going to go and hug the pyramid, so to speak.
You're going to go and walk the plank. You're going to have to hug the pyramid.
Walk the plank isn't really a euphemism, is it?
No, but...
That's when you actually get on a plank and you walk... I suppose, no, fair enough. They don't mention the critical bit. they don't call it walking the plank and then running out of plank and then subsequently falling into the sea. Which would be great if that was the canonical name for it. All pirate movies featured sort of Captain Purple Beard going, no, you shall walk the plank. And then the plank will prove insufficient for the apparent purposes thereof, and then there shall be eating by piranhas.
Piranhas in the sea.
Piranhas in
the sea. Piranhas.
Quick, first mate, Rouge Beard, pour the piranhas into the sea so that I can make good on the canonical name of the punishment.
I like how you just said that the plank which turned out to be too short for the purpose. And just imagining them going, oh yeah, you're going to walk the plank down to the dock side, honest. Instead of drowning at sea, they just kind of bang their head on the dock.
They'll keep on being foiled by heroes with extending planks. So they'll get to the end and it'll go... like, aha! It telescopes to truly enormous distances.
But apparently there's a campaign against all of these... all of these 11-11-11 rituals that were going to occur by the April 6th movement, who were the people who were responsible for basically lots of the stuff that happened in Egypt with the uprising.
The proper uprising.
The genuine
political movement as to the group of loons who are going to hug the pyramid. Yes, I see. Let's not confuse those two. I quite liked one group said that one of their greatest fears was that they would be trying to mount a Star of David on the top of the pyramid, to which surely the right answer is, I'd like to see you try. Because, like, think, you know, if you're trying to put up a Christmas tree, you inevitably end up doing some preposterously precarious maneuver in order to try and get the star on the top, you know, with, like, two stepladders stacked on top of each other, and, like, a rocking chair on top of that. And you're like, come on! It's very much going to be the same deal. You're going to end up with somebody on some preposterous edifice trying to lob a Star of David onto the top.
You have to make a tower of people next door. A second pyramid, if you will.
right, exactly. But even that's going to be difficult because the pyramid's getting away from you. You know, you're going to need an overhang in order to get at the top of the pyramid. You know, it's going to be quite a structure to this human pyramid with a huge, great human counterweight trying to keep the whole thing stable.
So now I'm quite sad they stopped them. I'd have loved
to
see that.
Yeah. And they'd be like, oh, close enough, lob the Star of David. It'd go falling down the other side, at which there's another human pyramid going, whoa, it's getting away. Pick up the Star of David, lob it. Essentially, it'd be that game, you know, that game at the fair where you're supposed to get, like, lob hoops over the stick, but it's basically, you know, bottles of beer or something like that, and it's basically impossible, but not quite, so as to prevent it from being outright fraud. Yeah, it'd be that, but with religious iconography and a wonder of the world, which as a fair game goes, is quite a budget.
I'm just thinking if people can get a mini on top of the Senate House in this university, then who knows what the people can. Who knows what a bunch of drunk students can. And that was overnight. Perhaps these guys might have had more time to do it, hadn't it? Rather than just overnight. So obviously, you just need a bunch of potentially drunk students to go over to Egypt. And
especially when the top of it is not flat.
Yeah.
So this mini would be just perched, so, you know, just teetering ever so slightly.
And then Michael Caine is in the back of it going, I've had a cunning plan. that would be a brilliant remake of the Italian Job. The Egyptian Job with a mini ending up on the top of
The pyramid.
Oh dear.
You'd have to be travelling quite some pace, wouldn't you, when you sort of realise you're about to hit the pyramid and you're like, pull the handbrake, lads. Oh no, I forgot we repurposed that as a beer pump. Damn it. Whee. All right, we're right on the very top.
So I think we should move on to the next conspiracy.
Alrighty then. What's conspiracy number two?
This is the age old, by which I mean probably a couple of hundred years old maybe, of people thinking that America has contact with aliens from outer space. And once again, the government has said, no we don't.
But this is essentially the conspiracy theorists trying the small children trying to get their parents to go to Disneyland approach. And, you know, if you go, can we go to Disneyland? No. Can we go to Disneyland? No. Etc. Etc. Except for in this case, it's like, are there aliens? No. Are there aliens? No. Are there aliens? And then eventually Obama will go, oh, for God's sake! Yes, there are aliens. Are you happy now? We've been keeping them in Kent.
I liked how the story reported that it was slightly ambiguous, the statement had been issued, because it mentioned that there are so many stars, there's probably some life somewhere in the universe, and this has been taken to mean that actually, yes, there are aliens, and yes, we have had contact, even though it says no, but maybe somewhere.
yeah, whatever.
The interesting thing is that the reason, particularly this time, that the government have had to say no again, is that there have been petitions about it, and more than 5,000 people signed a petition demanding that the White House disclose the government's knowledge of extraterrestrial beings. More than 12,000 signed another petition seeking formal acknowledgement of an extraterrestrial presence engaging with a human race.
Out of the whole of America, it's not very many.
No.
They also don't stipulate that they want truthful acknowledgement. So the White House could really pull one on them by saying, I acknowledge that there has been contact with extraterrestrials, full stop. Like, oh, we should have put that in there. And then you say, we require you to confirm or deny the truth of previous petition. That's when you say no. Basically, I'm saying they should wind them up.
Is that perhaps what they were doing with the... Yes, there were probably aliens somewhere, but not here. Honest.
Except for that they did confirm extraterrestrial beginnings, which is a similar level of outrage, I suppose, is that, no, there are absolutely no aliens, but we do have reason to believe that we originated on a moon of Jupiter and then found our way here about 5,000 years ago. Other than that, it's all nonsense. I like to imagine there are two completely disjoint camps of obsessives who campaign for those two different things. They're kind of playing them off against each other. The petition website's quite fun. Have you looked at this? It's shout despairingly into the vacuum.com or some words to that effect, where you can submit petitions to the US government. There was quite a good one I saw where it said that the petition was, we demand that we should receive a patronizing acknowledgement of this petition and be given a meaningless pat on the head and told to carry on being good American citizens. Whether they'll get their wish on that one, we don't know.
I was hoping that this story would then end with, and they did, because that's what happens to the vast majority of the petitions.
Well, or they successfully one-upped the White House into doing something. They're like, fine, you're going to be like that, going to be sarcastic about the matter, then here's a revolutionary new policy.
And it's all your fault.
Yeah. I'm abolishing education and doubling health. Schools, now hospitals, children to treat the sick. You want it back, you're required to submit an appropriately contrite petition of apology.
Well, we just like, we, the undersigned, are really, really sorry. There is also a UK e-petitions website, so...
There is indeed, yes. Yeah. I mean, we could try it. We could try and psych out David Cameron. I don't know, just dare him to empower the Labour Party or something.
You're just saying you want to troll the basically the government.
Yeah, essentially. I want to see if I can annoy him enough that he resigns and gives Ed Miliband the crown.
Not
the prime ministership, but the crown. He just storms into Buckingham Palace and goes, sorry, Imadge, you're going to need this. Yoink.
Okay, we're now going to move on to the arts and see if we can add some conspiracy into these two stories. Firstly, the Royal Opera House has launched a game for various eye devices, which is called Show Must Go On. Apparently it's called... It's quite different... No, sorry. Let me start that again. It's quite weird. In some parts of this article that I found, it's called The Show Must Go On, but in other bits of the article, it's just called Show Must Go On. Just imagining if there is someone whose surname is in fact Show. They're just really well named by their parents. And, yeah, they must go on stage. Wow, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, there you go. So,
I acknowledge your statement and have nothing to add. So what's the game about? What actually takes place?
Players play a beleaguered, goatee-bearded stage manager who has to deal with a lot of problems during a performance of an opera.
Oh.
Specifically goateed.
Yeah, specifically goateed.
Might he be the devil? That's pretty much the stereotype. The only stereotype I know to associate with goatees is that if ever the devil is portrayed, he has a goatee.
No, they said,
does the reverse hold?
Does it list what these problems are? Are they sort of child-friendly problems, like, oh no, this actress has hurt her foot? Or is it sort of, this actress can't go on because she's drunk half a bottle of tequila and is passed out on the floor? What do you do?
The sheet music has blown all over London is one of the suggestions. I can only hope that's got a little mini game where you actually have to like run around London and collecting all the little bits of music.
What, in person with your iPad?
Yes.
Wait, there's a piece in this location. Run there. You've got 20 minutes. Run.
Okay, so alternate reality opera house. That'd be pretty good. So especially if you concluded it by making them go to the Royal Opera House and pay to see a performance. That, you know, that would it'd be a pretty brave marketing stunt.
Yes, but, apparently that you can choose between The Marriage of Figaro, Carmen, The Nutcracker, or Swan Lake. It's all for 69p. There we go. That's not about bad. All the interest that you can get from that story, I think.
Fair enough, then. Let's move on to the next one. What have we got next?
The Phantom Tweeter of the West End. Ooh.
Ah, yes, okay. So this is the guy who... it's the Twitter account called West End Producer, which has been outing various secrets about productions in the West End. And the people who are in with that scene are trying to out whoever it is who's been acting as this sort of double agent, telling everybody's deepest, darkest secrets.
Well, or just making sarky remarks. That's also what it seems to be doing. That old saying, there are no small parts, only small actors, is a lie. Of course there's small parts, I pay them a lot less, dear. The fact that actually every single tweet that is on the examples that I've found ends with dear or dears makes me think that it is in fact Michael Winner.
Or it could be a deer. Like, he could be signing his tweets.
Rogue West End deer, yet to be found.
who also can't spell deer.
It would be yours sincerely, Caribou, but, you know, Twitter. 250 whatever characters. You got to make do.
140,
okay. You can tell I don't tweet.
But
as far as I could tell, though, nothing that shocking was being sent out. It was small, snide remarks about the theatre trade.
Yeah, so... Why is this such a big thing?
Why are they hunting him so obsessively?
I think they said he'd been giving away information about the rehearsals for Oliver. Apparently, Oliver is rehearsing for a tour show at present, and he'd been telling various secrets about them. But I don't think any secrets are actually quoted herein. I think they're doing a favour to their theatre colleagues by not repeating the secrets.
Apparently, one of the tweets suggested that TV presenter Keith Chegwin was eager to base a musical on his own life. And then Chegwin's office said no. But if Cameron McIntosh, who some people suspect is actually tweeting here, wants to have a chat, then Keith will bring his tap shoes.
Oh, lovely.
But apparently I don't know too much about Cameron McIntosh, but apparently the tweeter has very exaggerated mannerisms of Cameron McIntosh. So in the event that it is him, then this is the Scooby-Doo solution. You know, it was the fairground owner all along. You know, it's essentially a guy posing as himself in the event that it actually is him. But presumably people are now planting information on him. You know, they're getting suspects and then leaking to them sort of a slightly perturbed version of the same fact. Like, I don't know, you'd say something like, oh, have you heard that the guy who's going to play Oliver was arrested yesterday after having downed 27 tequilas or something? And then you adjust the number 27 around and then see what turns up on Twitter. That's how I'd catch him. But...
It kind of fails if people gossip.
Ah, yes, okay. So you might have an averaging effect. So you'd be like, so they said 25. So either it was Dave, or Jill and Fred talked to each other and went, I heard 23, or I heard 27, and then have come to a compromise.
Or Dave spoke to someone and said 25.
Yes, this is tricky. I might be able to achieve it by attaching different adjectives to the tweet. Not to the tweet, to the rumour. So I could use different... I could say he was found in a different borough, maybe? If there's enough boroughs, I could be like, oh yeah, he was arrested in Enfield, he was arrested in Neasden, I can sort of name different places, and then we might find that the eventual rumour that ends up says that he was found in one of the seven following different places, then that might tell me something, you know?
I think all we need to wait to do is wait for him to accidentally turn geotagging on, which will always happen at some point when you least expect it, and then just follow the movements around.
Another mystery solved by the misuse of technology. If you've got any comments about any of the conspiracies or pieces of culture, you can email us, studio@camfm.co.uk, or you can use the web form, or you can text CAM plus your message to 80809, which will cost you 10p plus a standard message rate.
In the meantime, we have had a couple of emails in. Dr. Richard Wareham asks whether the quarks, referring to the previous story about the paper wine bottles, he asks whether quarks are the source of topping up, therefore the wine could be charmed, or even bottomed. If you know anything about subatomic particles, that will have been very amusing. If you don't, I suggest you wiki quark during the oncoming musical break. You may then laugh in retrospect. He also notes that I have a secret admirer, which we knew. Michael's girlfriend then emails in to defend his reputation as being indeed also sexy, which is good. Somebody would love to, would love to see a musical based on the life of Keith Chegwin, apart from that bit where he presented a naked game show on Channel 5.
But if it's an opera, then that would just be classy rather than wrong.
Did that actually happen, though?
That did actually happen.
There was actually somehow this has passed me by.
It was called Naked Jungle, must have been, late 90s.
It's okay. Nice that they were upfront about it.
I'll be honest, until I read that, I'd actually forgotten that there was a Channel 5. I had sort of a moment of inner peace when I thought it didn't exist. I presume it still does.
It does.
Right.
The content is largely the same.
Chris recovers from that realization, we will play you some music.
Channel 5. We'll take a brief break. We'll be back.
On air,
97.2,
online,
camfm.co.uk,
and across Cambridge,
your station,
your Cam FM.
Hello and welcome back to Burst the Bubble. That was Clubfoot by Kasabian, and earlier we had Australia by the Manic Street Preachers. We're going to go on talking about some more silly news stories. What's our theme for this section, Michael?
Our theme for this section is just other news stories that we liked. I found interesting.
Fair enough then. It's the random miscellany that belongs at the end of the show. Did we get any emails in? Or
we have had a few emails pointing out that we had a factual inaccuracy that Naked Jungle was in fact 2000.
Oh, close enough.
But despite her mistake, Saf is sexy, which means that everyone has had a nice email.
Excellent. The votes are now tied at 1-1. If anybody would like to level the tie, not level the tie, you can't level a tie. A tie is already as level as it can get.
And someone's pointed out that quark is also a type of cheese. And this is what happens when you Google quark. You get a variety of recipes for fresh cheese. And thank you, Clem.
It is also incredibly harmful to wine. If you were to quark your wine, that would be just diabolical.
On the other hand, you might have some quark with your wine.
It's meant to be a good combination.
Really? Yogurt and wine.
Cheese.
Cheese and wine. Yes. Yes, that sounds altogether more reasonable. Yogurt and wine. Yes, no. It's given me the what's names. The Ghiblis.
Ghiblis and wine doesn't go well.
Ghiblis and wine does not go well, no. Put your wine glass down before an attack of the Ghiblis. Down it afterwards to offset the symptoms.
But our first story for this section is about the 2011 Scrabble Championships.
Oh, I missed these. I'm glad you've brought me up to date with them.
But apparently, when the last game was won, the audience went as wild as possible for all the 50 mainly middle-aged, very polite people.
Oh.
Well, how lovely. I'm glad somebody is acting as a sort of a support group for the people with excessive vocabularies and knitted sweaters.
This is actually quite interesting because the guy who won actually lives in my hometown.
Yeah. Which is?
Warrington.
Warrington. Hurrah!
So
he achieved something after all.
Yes.
He did say that he'd been talking to his co-workers about it for weeks, which makes me pity his poor co-workers, because surely there's only so much you can say about an upcoming Scrabble tournament where you have played no tiles so far.
When he gets back to Warrington, he's going to find it's gone. They've moved Warrington brick by brick into Yorkshire.
There's a bit in this story about the grand final of the National Scrabble Championship suddenly got personal. which is interesting. Are there like proper rivalries between people in Scrabble championships? And basically what I suppose I'm asking is, would you therefore be able to get a proper plot for a sports movie style thing, but for Scrabble?
Just a montage scene of someone reading a dictionary.
No. You had a plot where someone is defeated by someone, their arch nemesis, early on in the story, and therefore that goes for training, and then there's a very tense Scrabble battle.
A beautiful but fickle woman who determines her affections based entirely on Scrabble scores.
and despite the unlikely likelihood of it, everything comes down to the placing of the last tile. Because that's what always happens in sports movies. You never get a final that goes, oh wow, that was surprisingly one-sided. Like you get in the real world where it goes, oh, it's gonna be a really close match, and then it turns out not to be. It always goes down to the absolute last moment. Mm-hmm. I actually saw a movie recently called Lagan, an Indian movie. Have you heard of this one?
Lagan.
Lagan.
No, what's Lagan?
It's a movie in which some Indian villagers have to win a game of cricket against some English people who are there, because obviously it's a time when the English ruled India. Mm. And if they win this match, they won't have to pay taxes for 3 years. But if they lose it, they have to pay triple taxes.
Oh, I see. I thought you were going to suggest that this was like a cricket match for independence or something like that. That, you know, it would turn out that Britain lost the empire by an innings and 200 runs.
it was looking so well until the batting collapse in the middle of the second innings. But in that film, the game is decided on the last ball. But it's the last ball in the sense of they only have one wicket left, and they also only have one ball left in the day that they've got to actually have. So it's like something that basically never actually happens. Well, it does happen.
I think the Ashes in 2005 did exactly that, didn't it?
Yeah.
It was a run chase which went to the very last over, and I believe it was a last stand as well. That it was the final two batsmen who dragged out the final 50 runs. So either we're living in a sports movie, and that was it, like, that was the conclusion, and we're now living in this sort of weird, like, nadir of a film which has long since finished.
All the outtakes, basically, put together at the end.
This is a hilarious blooper where they're like, they're not playing cricket at all. Fools. Any minute now, we'll remember that we're supposed to be in the test match and slap our foreheads.
Okay, it happens rarely, but obviously this was happening from the start of the movie, basically. I'd like to now see a Scrabble movie where somehow the equivalent occurred.
So I've got some patience with the sort of the really awesome Scrabblers, in that sort of every now and then, you know, some of the words that they come out with are genuinely excellent, and they're interesting, you know, for the, it's like, oh, I didn't know that existed, and it seems like a rather, you know, an interesting word. I'm pleased to know that it exists. Like one of the guys got ergotize, I believe. Which apparently means, if I can find the definition...
Turgo.
Turgo. I believe it's to do with logical argument. Another guy got M-U-E-Z-Z-I-N-S, which I don't know how to pronounce, but apparently refers to the guys who lead the call to prayer at a mosque. which is, you know, that's like, oh, I'm somewhat glad I know that. But then you also inevitably get, you know, those tedious people who've memorized the list of every two-letter word that allegedly exists in the English language. You know, the word quig, you know, QG, which turns out to mean to lift a Ford Mondeo above one's head successfully for not more than 5 minutes or something. It's just...
It's also those bitty little words to get stuck with. It said that one of the starting words was we.
Yeah.
The ones you just have to play.
Sort of leading the opponent into a false sense of security, perhaps. So they also came up with the word E-U-O-I, which is French. Let's be honest. Oh, yeah. There's no conceivable use of the English language. It's just, it's not nearly Saxonic enough to have possibly come from this language to begin with. And they also got woofy, which is, does that mean just what it literally says? You know, W-O-O-F-Y, woofy? Is that actually just a really unimaginative adjective for a poodle?
I thought it was the name for a small unit of some sort of illicit substance.
Really?
But I'm not quite sure why now.
I'm not sure I could take myself seriously if I was dealing woofies.
Perhaps that was going on in that Mexican jail. or it's what the police could offer criminals. You go, free woofy.
They'd be like, well, it must be drugs. I'm a drug dealer. They're offering me some really obscure term. It must be. I'll go along. Maybe there's free beer.
Yeah. Well, then someone just got really confused about Wi-Fi. And then just started mispronouncing it because they heard it over a rail station tannoy or something. Yeah.
In France, they do have a Wi-Fi, which is... it makes Wi-Fi sound a lot cuter. To a certain degree, a little bit camper.
But also...
Yeah, Wi-Fi.
But also smellier.
Yeah, just a little.
Oh, dear. And I think we've got a couple more stories just to round off the show.
All right. What have we got up next?
We have got... Oh, no, this is another nice one that I forgot we had, which is that the first scientific paper to be filed from space has been published.
Excellent. So, presumably from the International Space Station?
Yep. It is believed to be the first article in an earthly publication ever to be submitted from outside the planet. I would like to argue with that. I would argue that most scientific papers are published from outside the planet. Most people do not live and work inside the planet. They live on the planet. Yeah. And I think, considering this is an editor of a scientific journal who is saying this, I think he really needs to work on his accuracy.
I have mixed feelings about this, because surely these people up at the space station have better things to be doing than reading the style file and sitting there with LaTeX for hours on end trying to get the footnotes right to send in their paper.
Yeah. It would be curiously mundane, wouldn't it? Like if you blew an afternoon trying to set the timer on the oven in the International Space Station. You're just like, ah. There has to be a better use for this, like, billions of pounds worth of orbital equipment.
It didn't say that they actually did it, wrote it on the space station. It was just, like, submitted from the space station. So it's not clear whether they went, oh, do you know what'd be really fun? If we sent it back up there to our mate who's still up there, and then he could submit it from there. Like using his... blah de blah de blah at outerspace.co.uk. I was about to say .co.uk and then realised that would be entirely wrong. What is space's domain?
Dot and then a single space. Doesn't work most of the time. So I hope for their sake that they weren't submitting to one of those old-fashioned journals that only accepts submissions by paper mail. Like, you'd have to send post from the International Space Station, which would be quite fun. chuck it in one of those vacuum tube things and just lob it out the door. And with just a note that's like, if found, please deliver to.
The editor of the journal, which is the Europhysics Letters Journal, said, I certainly hope to attract further excellent research from beyond the globe. So obviously the people who were asking whether America had contact with aliens were obviously writing their petition to the wrong person.
Exactly.
I'd like that if actually it turned out that the first contact with aliens was them submitting a paper for a conference on space travel. going, guys, you got it all wrong. You do it like this.
So I wonder if, like, does this paper get sort of undue credit from the journal for the fact that it was submitted in such extreme circumstance? Like, it would seem a shame to turn down people who'd done their research, gone to such extraordinary lengths to do their research. Like, will it get to the point that the people applying for next month's issue with the journal will be like, well, it's a fairly mundane paper, you know, it's sort of fairly expected result, small advance to the field of human knowledge, but I did do the research while suspended upside down in the crater of an active volcano, so, you know, like, it wasn't about the volcano, but nonetheless, I was there.
This was actually about being in space, though. The paper. It wasn't just a random experiment.
It's just criticism of Shakespeare or something, but they just wrote it up there.
Yes, criticism of Shakespeare in neurophysics letters.
The physics content comes entirely from the derivation of the paper rather than its content.
But, yes, it was all about plasmas in microgravity, for those of you who are wondering.
But, well.
Moving on, we've still got time for a couple of stories. And we're going to ask Sarah to read this because I know she's been, I know she's been practicing this place name.
Lake Vernoy. In Lake Vernoy, they had to fell a tree, unfortunately, because the tallest tree in Wales, I believe it was, had toppled over slightly. But instead of taking the entire tree out, which you might think was a practical solution, they decided to leave 50 metres of it, and it has been carved into a giant hand, reaching up to the sky, as a sort of memorial to the dead tree.
I believe it was the tallest tree in the entire UK. Before it came down?
Yeah, it's now the ex-tallest tree in the entire...
Indeed. But apparently it was 63.7 metres tall, which is going some.
I like to imagine now that if you actually could zoom back far enough away from this hand, it would actually look like a zombie rising from the grave. Absolutely giant zombie.
But they opened this up to plenty of artists to apply. I don't quite understand why they picked a giant hand as their winning design. It's a very nice hand, but...
Yeah, I think he said it was symbolic of the tree's last attempt to reach the sky, which is nice. And on that note, I'm afraid we're about to run out of time for the week. Let's just take a quick look at the emails that have come in. Rich notes that Chris with the Ghiblis cannot be unseen. Fair enough. Apparently, the World Scrabble Championship last month led to a strip search of one of the players who's alleged to have swiped some tiles.
Oh, no, demands for. It never actually happened.
It never actually happened. And finally, Low Earth Orbit is covered by the Dot Earth top-level domain, just like the rest of the planet, which is ambitious, to be frank. But it's good to know we're prepared for the aliens. Now, this has been Burst the Bubble. I've been Chris, and my co-host has been Michael, and our guest has been Miss Sarah Franklin. And we'll be back next week with some more silly news. Goodbye.